Thanks for listening to AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's only progressive talk station. Now, coming to you live from the banks of the Willamette River, it's Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman.
You've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. My life has value.
Online at 620kpoj.com and on the air at AM 620 KPOJ.
I want you to get up right now and go to the window and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Israeli forces stormed at least one ship attempting to break the blockade of Gaza. Commanders lowered themselves from the helicopters and onto the Mavi Marmara. That's the lead ship in a flotilla of six vessels which are carrying aid for the Palestinian territory. We can confirm that at least two people have been killed and more than 30 have been injured. Israeli radio is reporting the death toll may be as high as 16 people. Well, our reporter on board the ship sent this report before communications were cut.
The organizers on board the Mavi Marmara, after two people have been confirmed killed by the Israeli army, have now asked all the passengers to go inside. They've raised the white flag. This after Israeli commandos descended upon the ship in international water from a helicopter, as well as surrounded it by vessels from all sides. Tens of people, civilians, have been injured. There are still sounds of life. Fire, despite the white flag being raised. Tens of people have been injured. Two people have been killed. On board the ship, which holds 600 activists, parliamentarians, women, children, and the elderly, all of whom are civilians. Organizers have asked everyone to go inside. So this is where we shall head. Jamal Al-Shayal, Al Jazeera, on board the Mavi Marmara in international waters of the Mediterranean Sea.
Oh, welcome back to Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman. This is AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's only progressive talk station. And you were just listening to a report on board a flotilla back in 2009 that was on its way to Gaza. Nine people were killed. Not to Gaza.
2010.
Sorry, I thought it was to Gaza. It was last year. That's right. We're coming up on the anniversary of it. Nine people were killed. Many of the reports said that many of the victims were shot at close range when Israeli commandos boarded one of the ships in the middle of the night, creating madness and fear. The Israeli commandos claimed that they were under threat. And that is why they fired, but it looked like an act of real aggression that resulted in the deaths of nine people, one of which was an American citizen. I think that the message was clear from the Israeli government, don't send any more flotillas. I think that it was a PR move as much as anything, and it was also an atrocity. So there is another flotilla that is actually due to set sail tomorrow, or you're leaving tomorrow this week. They're going to try it again, and a lot of brave people are going to get on board. And I want to preface the conversation, and we have a guest who from Portland who's mad as hell about the treatment of the Palestinians in Gaza, who has decided to join the flotilla, and she's going to be our guest in a moment. But I want to begin this conversation by stating plainly my position on Israel. It's a very tricky conversation to have in America. I am half Jewish. I don't know that that has anything to do with it, but I do support Israel's right to exist. I feel that if you don't support Israel's right to exist, it exists nonetheless, and we need a solution. However, I am opposed to many of the policies that I see coming out of the Israeli government, particularly as they pertain to Gaza and the West Bank. And for those of you who don't know, this was territory that was gained in the Six-Day War in 1967. This was not a part of the original boundary drawing in 1948 when Israel was created. There was a Six-Day War in 1967 in which Gaza and the West Bank were added to Israel's borders. There are many, many Palestinians living there who live under what Jimmy Carter called apartheid. So that's my setup for the conversation. We're going to be talking to two very special people at opposite ends of the age spectrum who are doing this for same and different reasons. Our first guest is a Portlander. Her name is Erin DeRamus. Erin, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
You might want to move a little closer to her mic. There you go. She has a soft voice. She's a local peace activist and an acupuncturist by trade. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Yep.
Well, rather than having me do all of this, you're in studio. Erin DeRamus, who is going to be joining the next flotilla to Gaza, is with us. Erin, before we get into it, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, I currently live in Portland, and I'm a practicing acupuncturist at NARA, the Native American Rehabilitation Association in town. I've done that for the last couple of years, working in public health and addiction treatment. And I also do instruction of Qigong and Chinese medicine at the local school in town.
Okay, so you've decided to join the next flotilla. This is Flotilla 2,
yes,
essentially, to Gaza. Well, first of all, tell us a little bit about why you made the decision to do this.
I started work back in getting to know more about the facts of what was actually happening in the Palestinian territories a few years back. And I've always been interested in working with indigenous populations and displaced populations that have little access to health care. I think that that's what's really great about the medicine that I'm in, is it can be accessible and affordable. And so starting on that note, I decided to go to the West Bank and do some trainings there for some mental health providers for victims of torture in Ramallah. And I headed over there in 2008 on December 25th, which was 2 days before the three-week bombings started by Israel, called Operation Cast Lead.
Yeah, Operation Cast Lead.
Yes.
Not very subtle.
No.
Right. Is that the one where I saw children drawing peace signs on missiles that were being shot over into Gaza?
I believe that that's happened a few times.
That was one of the
bombs in Lebanon, bombs in Gaza. That's kind of part of the indoctrination.
Yeah, the image of that just burned into my head.
Yeah.
I've never forgotten it. Like children literally drawing peace signs on the tips of missiles.
Oh, yes.
My God. Anyway, keep going.
Yeah, and young children.
Young children.
Yeah, they were like seven.
Yeah.
It was, I know exactly what you're talking
Painful.
About. Yeah, and so I was over there for almost the whole duration of the war, but I was in the West Bank, so I wasn't directly in Gaza. But I saw a lot in the West Bank there that I think just doesn't come across in our media. The amount of devastation that occurred on a daily basis and how helpless people feel about helping out their relatives, their friends, their families stuck in another part of a country that they'll never get to see. You know, they can never go there. And to watch this happening to them and feeling like they can't do anything about it, there's a sense of hopelessness. And what I saw coming from some of the live streams and some of the newscasts there, it was just horrendous. There was the largest death toll in one day on the first day of bombings, and many, many children, because it was right around the time that children got let out of school. And another thing that I saw there was how easily the media manipulated the stories that were coming through again and again. We would see one report, and then within a couple minutes, it had completely changed as it filtered through into more international media outlets.
So give us a visual. You say that you saw devastation. What kind of devastation are you seeing? Help people understand what's really going on.
Yeah. So the first day that I walked down, I was in Bethlehem, and I walked down to do something in town, and that's when the bombings had occurred, like maybe an hour beforehand. And the immediate reports that were out, it was just chaos. There was rubble and blood everywhere. People holding their children, holding their friends, of various amounts of damage. Some people were blown apart. Some people just had...
You actually saw this?
This is what I saw on the news. This is the
right.
News feed.
Okay.
Yeah, but it was everywhere, you know, and that's what we were all just just stuck to the news to see what was happening in another part of the country that was, you know, about, I can't even remember the amount of distance, but it's like 30 miles away. I mean, it's not very far at all. And it's a part of this population that they've been removed from. You know, and there's families that live in the West Bank and Gaza, you know, that they will never see one another. And so to see something like this and know that it's happening to your kin, to your friends, and not be able to do anything about it and not hear anything in the international community condemning these actions, it was really horrible. And so what you see now is, so the reason why I ended up wanting to go on the flotilla is because ever since I saw that, and saw how it affected people even secondarily in the West Bank and not primarily, you know, right, as in right, Gaza, right. I've dedicated my life even more to bringing awareness to what's actually happening there, because I think that, one, the media doesn't really portray it to the extent to which things are happening. They don't really tell a lot of the stories from inside the West Bank and Gaza.
As far as I can tell, there's nothing coming out of the West Bank and Gaza
exactly.
at all. We were talking the other day, something like 47% unemployment over
yes.
there. People get jobs moving rubble, literally, of their
sifting through. Yeah,
of
sifting
their devastated
through
country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, going and cleaning up the buildings that still have not been repaired after 2.5 years. That war happened. You know, war usually has two equal sides. So this was a massacre. It was not a war. It was a bombing of another nation that could not defend itself.
Palestinians were not able to defend themselves against this massive onslaught.
Exactly. Yeah. And it just kept escalating. And that was the whole thing is, I mean, it was kind of shocking, even though over there in the West Bank, as well as in Gaza, they're used to daily violence. You know, it's hard for us to conceive here in the States about this, but they're used to daily confrontation, violence, different levels of oppression in various manners, economic, social. There's a lot of different constraints that are put on everyday life. And even with that idea and that awareness, this was so, people couldn't really conceive what was happening because it was just so disproportionate and so extreme.
When you heard about the flotilla, did you instantly know? Yes. Was it one of these responses? Yes. Or did you have to think about it?
I think that my heart said yes. I think that I was like, oh, I wonder if I can get involved in this. But then there was a lot of logistics. And so sure. I definitely took a moment to sit back and say, you know, can I really do this? Can I, everything, you know, finances, work, not to mention what I'm getting myself into.
Potentially.
Yeah.
You leave tomorrow, right?
I do.
And how long are you gone for?
I'm hopefully returning on the 7th of July.
So about 3 weeks, you're going to be gone. Give us a sense of what your itinerary is. When will you actually be arriving in Gaza?
So that's still a little bit up in the air because of the port of deportation.
Wait, hold that question. Yeah. That's my 1 minute music. Thank you, Rob. We're talking to Erin DeRamis. She's a peace activist, an acupuncturist, and someone who has committed herself to going on the next flotilla to Gaza to bring attention to the suffering and the oppression of the Palestinian people at the hands of the Israeli foreign policy. You're listening to Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman. We have another special guest who's going to join this conversation. We will be right back. Welcome back to Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman. You're listening to AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's one and only progressive talk station, where on a Saturday afternoon, we get to have conversations like the one that we are having with Portland's very own Erin DeRamis. She is a local acupuncturist, a citizen who is morally outraged by the policies that she sees going on in Gaza. She visited Israel and during the bombings and had a visceral response that haunted her. and decided to do something about it. And this is the key. This is what Mattis Hell is all about. It's all about how we respond to the crisis of the world that we live in. It is our, in the absence of our response, we are doomed. But when we respond, there's hope. And that's why it's wonderful to have Aaron DeRamus with us. Aaron, welcome back to Mad as Hell in America. Your whole decision to go on this flotilla to Gaza, it really embodies the spirit of this whole show, the whole message that I only have one or two things to say. And this is one of them. I really, really admire very much what you are doing. Let's start with some basics, because, you know, sometimes there are huge gaps in my understanding of things, and so I'm never embarrassed to ask the stupid question.
It's always good.
What's a flotilla?
So a flotilla is comprised of many ships.
Okay, it's just a now, and this flotilla has many ships, but it from many different countries.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yeah, there's about 20 to 22 countries involved, and about 10 ships.
10 ships, and that was originally, it was going to be 10 or 12 ships. What are some of the countries?
There's the U.S. boat, the Canadian boat, there's an Irish boat. I believe there's an Italian boat, or there's at least a lot of Italian activists involved. The whole name of the flotilla is named after an Italian activist that just died recently. It was one of his key phrases that he always said. He did a lot of work in Gaza with the local communities there, the civil society communities, and he always said, just stay human, you know, and so the whole flotilla is named Stay Human after him.
I like that a lot.
Yeah,
I wonder
really
what that
beautiful.
Sounds like in Italian. I won't ask you to pronounce it, but it's probably something lyrical.
I think Restiamo Umani. I'm not sure. I'm not good at Italian.
I like it in both languages.
It's beautiful.
So what is the name of the American ship?
The Audacity of Hope.
And is that meant ironically?
Yes.
Yeah. Elaborate on the irony.
Well, I wasn't necessarily part of the naming of the boat,
right.
But I remember running into the organizers after they had decided to name it that, and there was kind of that feel of, calling Obama out on, you said that you were running on this campaign of hope and change, and we really haven't seen a lot of it.
No, and for those of you who don't know, America gives $3 billion a year in aid to Israel, most of which goes to, or if not all of which goes to military aid, and that military force is being used to oppress the people of Gaza. I want to play a clip from Jimmy Carter. This was back. He wrote a book called Palestine Peace, Not Apartheid. He used very, very strong language to describe what was going on in Gaza. And I want to play the clip. Rob, let's play that clip.
President Carter, why did you use the word apartheid in the book's title?
But there's no doubt that within the occupied territories, Palestinian land, that there is a horrendous example of apartheid. The occupation of Palestinian land, the confiscation of that land that doesn't belong to Israel, the building of settlements on it, the colonization of that land, and then the connection of those isolated but multiple settlements, more than 200 of them, with each other by highways on which Palestinians can't travel, and quite often where Palestinians cannot even cross. So the persecution of the Palestinians now under the occupied territories is under the occupation forces is one of the worst examples of human rights deprivation that I know.
I mean, that's pretty strong language from a former president of the United States. He says some of the worst human rights abuses that he knows.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty devastating. If there's time, I may play another clip from him saying why it's so hard to have this conversation in this country, because as soon as we start to challenge Israeli foreign policy and Israeli policy towards the Palestinians, we're suddenly cast as anti-Israel and potentially anti-Semitic.
Exactly.
And that just needs to end. And
yes.
That's why when you contacted me, I felt it was important to have you on the show to talk about this. And I must say, a minute ago, I was moved by your whole remembrance of what you saw while you were there. I mean, there is real suffering going on. And he mentioned something. There's a trick going on here about the occupation of Gaza. They're technically not occupying Gaza. Isn't that right? I mean, they can technically say, well, we're not occupying Gaza. We're not settling Gaza.
Right. We removed our settlements.
Right.
So therefore, we're not occupying, quote unquote,
anymore. So now what's going on? What does that mean?
So now what they've done is they've put it under siege, and they've blockaded any mode of transporting materials in.
They've turned it into a prison.
Yes, they have. It is an open air prison of 1.5 million people.
And they are bordered on every border. There are nothing goes in and nothing goes out.
Unless it goes through the Israeli channels, you know, which most of the time ends up keeping things sitting for months, if not years, maybe never getting in, waiting until it's not good anymore to take in. There's a large list of items that are not allowed in for various reasons. And at one point, you know, it got pointed out that pasta was on it, and there was kind of a little bit more awareness to it. So I believe that they started letting in a few more things, but it really hasn't changed the situation there.
So is there widespread hunger going on there?
Oh, yes. Yes, widespread hunger. There's very limited amount of potable water. Birth defects are, it's amazing the percentage of birth defects, blue baby syndrome.
Where is that coming from?
Because the mothers do not get the nutrients that they need. They don't get the water supply that they need. I read a report about, I believe it's the nitrogen in the water supply that can cause that. I'm not a water technician or anything, so I'm not too sure about all of that. But I know that what you see there is just a population that's slowly starving in...
being tortured, imprisoned,
yes.
Starved, deprived of water, bombed regularly. And this is where your taxpayers' dollars are going, right? I mean, we don't have money for anything else in this country, but we've got $3 billion to send to a country that is turning Gaza into a prison. Are you okay with that? I'm not. I'm mad as hell about it, and so is Aaron DeRamis. You're listening to Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman. This is AM 620 KPOJ. When we come back, we're going to meet another very special guest who is going to be on the flotilla with Aaron. Stay with us. You want to meet this woman. We'll be right back.
Prepare yourselves for Klugman.
Welcome back to Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman. You're listening to AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's only progressive talk station. Dear Prudence, I just had to let that one play out a little bit. We are talking about Flotilla 2, and if you don't remember Flotilla 1, it was a disaster. It was a flotilla to Gaza that was on a peaceful mission to bring essentially awareness, supplies, humanitarian supplies. There were no weapons, but it was essentially to bring awareness to what's going on in Gaza and the oppression of the Palestinian people at the hands of the Israeli foreign policy. And on that flotilla, nine people died, many described as being shot at very close range. I would imagine it's a boat. It was meant to send a very clear message. Send no more flotillas. We will not tolerate awareness. And yet there is a flotilla too. People still got mad as hell. Our guest is Aaron DeRamis. In a minute, we're going to meet, someone else who's going to be joining Aaron, someone very special. But Aaron, we were talking at the break. She's going to be going on the flotilla. She leaves tomorrow. We were talking about something that you wanted to touch on before we bring on Hetty.
Oh, it's just what you had said before about our response as American citizens, as humans, as people on this planet sharing with another. You know, it's just that I think that where we are right now, we've become so overwhelmed with how things are that we don't believe that it can change anymore. And I think that that's another reason why we've all decided to take this step, is because we see a different world. We see a different possibility. We see the potential of a world that can be in harmony and in peace, and where both populations can live and everybody deserves the same rights, you know. And I think that that's a really important thing right now, is to help people start seeing how the world can be different.
Yes, everything depends on our ability to respond, and our willingness to respond, and our willingness to risk something in that response. And I really admire your courage. That's why I'm having you on the show. It really embodies the whole spirit of this show. We're going to bring on our next guest. And rather than me reading an intro, I found an absolutely marvelous clip on YouTube about this woman, our next guest, who's going to be joining Aaron on the Flotilla 2. The Audacity of Hope is the American ship. Let's play Hetty's clip, please.
She looks just like any other American tourist, enjoying the fading sun as it slips behind the majestic pyramids of Egypt. But the reality is, her smiles mask her own personal disappointment and frustration. Her mind is on Gaza, not Giza. Yes, she is very different to the tourists who head to Egypt to marvel at its ancient heritage. But being different is not something new to this 85-year-old grandmother, who has experienced what it's like to be different. As a child, she stared down the barrel of a Nazi gun, and 8 decades on, she still finds herself in the crosshairs. But this time, they are the crosshairs of Israeli guns. Meet Hetty Epstein. This is her story, and she shares it with you today, in the hope you will also be inspired to go that one extra step for the children of Palestine.
Well, I could not have done a better job than that. That is from Press TV, who did a wonderful job introducing Hetty. Hetty Epstein, welcome to the show. Welcome to Mad as Hell in America. It's an honor to have you here.
Thank you very much. And that was Yvonne Ridley speaking.
Ah, what a wonderful report it is. If you go to YouTube and type in Hetty Epstein, you can see the whole profile. I ended the clip when they said, when they talked about your story, and they go on to tell your story. But why don't you, in your own words, tell our listeners your story, please?
Well, I was born in Germany. I'm Jewish. And when Hitler came to power, I was 8 years old. And my parents very quickly realized that they needed to get out of Germany. And they were very anxious to leave and became increasingly more desperate to get out. And they were willing to go anywhere in the world just to get out. But there was one place they were not willing to go to, and that was Palestine. And why was that? Because they were anti-Zionists. They did not want to, and that's why they did not want to go to Palestine. And so that's my background. And I came to the United States in May 1948, about the same time that Israel became a state. And I had some mixed feelings at that time. On one hand, I was glad that there was a place for those who survived the Holocaust to go to, because maybe they couldn't or chose not to go back to where they came from. But on the other hand, I remembered my parents' anti-Zionism. And so I felt that somewhere down the road, no good would come of this. What that might be, I couldn't possibly imagine. But I was new in the United States and new things to learn, and so Israel and Palestine were on the back burner of my interests and remained there until 1982, when I got what you might call a wake-up call. I learned about the massacres in the two refugee camps of Sabra and Shatila, and I needed to find out, what was that all about? Who was responsible for it? Who was adversely affected by it? And what happened between 1948 and 1982? And as I learned more and understood more, I became increasingly disturbed about the policies and practices of the Israeli government and military vis-a-vis the Palestinian people and the Palestinian land. And as I learned more and understood more, I began to speak out and speak out publicly against those policies and practices. And in 2003, I was for the first time in the Israeli-occupied West Bank. I've been back there 5 times since then. I have tried 4 times to go to Gaza, and I am now hoping on my 5th try, I will finally make it to Gaza on the U.S. boat to Gaza, the Audacity of Hope. I am leaving St. Louis, where I live, on Monday to fly to Greece, where I will meet other passengers who will be on the Audacity of Hope, or the U.S. boat to Gaza. And we will have some nonviolent resistance training. And hopefully by the end of the week, we will be on our way to meet the other boats somewhere in the eastern Mediterranean. And together, all of the boats will then travel to Gaza. Whether we will make it, that is really up to the Israelis at this point. They have been threatening with all kinds of awful things. And I've never been fearful. I am fearful now because they have said they will bring attack dogs on the boats, and dogs that have been specially trained to attack us on the boats. And those dogs really scare me. I have no illusion that I could really reach the Israeli commandos that are going to be trying to stop us. But there is always a possibility you might reach the humanity in a human being. But what do you reach in a dog? Those dogs scare me, but they are not going to stop me from going. I am determined to go to Gaza.
And how old are you, Hetty?
I'm 86 now.
86. Years young, you say.
That's right.
This may not be a fair question, but do you consider yourself a supporter of Israel's right to exist?
Not in the way they are now.
So are you...
They claim to be the only democratic country in that area. They are not democratic. I mean, they are oppressors.
Yes, they are. Have become the oppressors. I have a friend who says that in the first time of in history, in the arc of Jewish thought and action, which has traditionally stood for social justice and human rights, that we are seeing a radical swing to the right towards militarism and systemic oppression of their enemies. Do you think that this is a fair characterization? And both of you feel free.
You're saying that they're enemies. They have created enemies. Mm. They claim that they are surrounded by all these enemy countries, but these countries were not their enemies. But because of their policies, the Israelis' policies and practices, they have created enemies and continue to create enemies. I mean, now, you know, some of the people that are going to be on this flotilla may not have been... had bad feelings or bad thoughts about Israel at one point. But after they found out what Israel is capable of doing, and not only capable, but is doing to an oppressed people, to the Palestinians, they have turned against Israel. So they're continuously creating enemies for themselves.
What about within, I think that's an excellent point, Hetty, and I appreciate the kind of correction there, right? They're creating enemies. I often wonder that what would happen if the $3 billion in aid that we give to Israel were going to,
all the difference in the world.
Going to humanitarian aid. My policy is when you export justice, you import peace. They're a logical conclusion of one another. So if the money that we were giving to Israel were improving the lot of everyone in the area, schools and hospitals and universities and food, what we would see, these are all functions of peace. We would see peace.
Right.
So I really appreciate the correction there. What do you know about the climate of thought in Israel itself? I mean, we know that Netanyahu is a hardliner. We know that Rabin was killed by a Jewish hardliner. What about the majority of thought in Israel? Do they support these policies towards Gaza, or is it a small minority, and is this really about a land grab?
The peace community in Israel is still relatively small, though I think it is probably increasing. But the children in Israel, when they're in nursery school probably already, are taught how to hate.
Yes.
And so they are, the next generation will be hating Palestinians, will be hating, all kinds of people. But what I want to add also is, while maybe more people are beginning to see what Israel really is capable of, what evil they're capable of, it is the world governments that have not done anything, have not spoken up. And it is because of that that civilians like those of us who are going to be on these boats are it's incumbent upon us to do what our governments are not, or what world governments are not doing. And we've been invited by civil society in Gaza. We are not involved with any political group for pro or con. We are just civilians who are going to go to Gaza, who hope to go to Gaza, and tell the civilians there that there are people out in the world who really do care about what is happening to them and are not concerned about them, and that behind us stand hundreds more who couldn't be on the boats but are feeling just like we do.
I just love your passion. Hedy Epstein, Aaron DeRamus, we wish you all Godspeed on this flotilla. We hope that you bring awareness and peace to the region with this effort. And I thank you both so much for being on Mad as Hell in America. When you guys come back, will you come back on the show and tell me how it went?
Of course.
I'd love to.
And I am going to be surrounding you with peace.
You'll know when we come back.
Yes. Peace and love be with you.
Thank you, and with you, too, and thank you for having me on your program.
It's been an absolute pleasure, and the pleasure is all mine. You're listening to Mad as Hell in America. We'll be right back for the wrap-up.
In a country clearly divided.
Stop holding everything, including the middle class, hostage.
The reality is, this is a very bad piece of public policy.
This is the one place to hear about it.
We are going to be a results-driven Congress.
We cannot cut our way to competition with these other countries.
With news at the top and bottom of the hour and really smart talk in between.
We owe it to these young people. We owe it to the future.
Portland's Progressive Talk, 620 KPOJ.
Hey, parents, it's hard to pick up your kids nowadays without embarrassing them.
Hi, honey.
Mom, not in front of my friends.
Well, kiss the embarrassment goodbye with OMGPS. OMGPS is a state-of-the-art navigation system that tells you exactly how far away you need to park when you pick up your kids.
Keisha at mall. Proceed to outer food court.
But she's not at the food court. She's at the movie theater.
Exactly. OMGPS comes with patented preteen reasoning technology to pinpoint precise pickup locations and minimize embarrassment.
In 100 yards, turn off the oldies music.
Thanks, OMGPS.
OMGPS is not available in stores because it doesn't exist. But that's okay. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Because kids in foster care don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUsKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
Coming up next is a really funny guy. You all know him. Let's give it up for Alonzo Bowden. Alonzo!
So my uncle calls and he says he's dizzy and he's losing his balance. I'm like, Unc, you want me to take you to a doctor? He's like, no, I'm going to look up the symptoms. I said, your symptoms are you're dizzy and you're losing your balance. So he said, I can't get on the internet because my arm is numb. I said, well, use your good arm and dial 911.
Stroke's no joke. If you or someone you love is showing symptoms of stroke, don't call family, don't dial a friend, don't wait because it might be too late. Dial 911. Time lost is brain lost. Seriously, dial 911.
Learn all the symptoms of a stroke at strokesnojoke.org. That's strokesnojoke.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
Imagine welcoming a young person from Brazil, Japan, Germany, or one of 60 other countries into your family as a Youth for Understanding exchange student. Now everyday experiences take on a new and exciting twist. American traditions gain deeper meaning as you share them with your new son or daughter. Call Youth for Understanding at 1-866-4-YFU-USA or visit their website at www.yfu-usa.org to learn how you can become a Youth for Understanding host family.
Let the Clug Man revolution begin!
What happened to me? And I didn't care. But you,
welcome back to Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman. You're listening to AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's only progressive talk station. I had to let that song play out. If I didn't care for you and you didn't care for me, we've got to care about each other, and we've got to be willing to take a stand. I don't know about you, but Hedy Epstein just blew me away. I'm like trying to pick myself up. This is an 86-year-old woman who is going on a flotilla to Gaza, who potentially faces attack dogs, something she's frightened of. I didn't ask her, but I imagine it had something to do with also that we know that the Nazis used attack dogs and German shepherds to intimidate people, and I wonder if there wasn't some echo or memory there. You don't need an echo or memory to be frightened of an attack dog. And I loved what she had to say about the idea that you can reason with a human being, that maybe there's some humanity that you can reach with a human being, but you can't with an attack dog. I mean, these are two women who are walking into potentially life-threatening situations because they care enough about the human rights of someone else, that they were mad as hell, that they couldn't sit by and do nothing while others were systematically oppressed and tortured and deprived. And we just can't take it anymore. None of us. I have such great respect and admiration for both of those women. You couldn't see Erin, but she's a very young person. I call them young people now that I'm over 40, probably 25 or 26, giving up 3 weeks of her life, her practice, her work to go and face real danger. Because if you don't think the Israeli army is dangerous, you're fooling yourselves. They killed 9 people on a humanitarian flotilla the last time this went on. And America gives $3 billion a year so Israel can behave like this. And the best that President Obama can do is come out and roll out a plan for peace that's 30 flipping years old and make no demands. But we have to make a distinction between the country of Israel and its policies, and we must say no to its policies. If you want to chime in here, there's a few minutes left, 503-248-0620, 1-866-452-0620. I don't know about you. I was moved by this last interview. Erin was here coming to tears at times. We have to care about each other. Back to the original point. If we lose the capacity to care, we lose the capacity to respond. And if we lose the capacity to respond, our world is lost. It all depends on our individual response. If you're waiting for someone else to respond, you're too late. You're too late. This is it, man. This is the human species at the crossroads. And it's people like Erin, and it's people like Hedy, and it's people like you and me and all of us who must respond. And it means that you're going to have to risk your comfort in order to do that. Are you willing to risk your comfort? Am I? Let me ask myself that question. Am I willing to risk my comfort to stand for a new way of being in the world? I'm going to go away asking myself that question. I live a far too comfortable life. And I think of this show as my stand, but it's still comfortable because my butt is in a nice comfortable chair and I have my nice comfortable Master Cleanse drink. What are you willing to risk to have the world that we know we can live in? We mustn't accept it as it is. And I know that you feel it. If you're listening to the show, you feel it. This is it. Like Chris Hedges said, this is the last line of defense, man. We are it. It's this generation, these people, right now. It's us. There's no one to wait for. No one's coming. Jesus, Moses, God. No one's coming to save us. No one's got a magic wand that's going to make this happen. We, our humanity, responding from the depth of our humanity and being willing to risk something to live in a world that works for everybody is what we must do. I want to encourage you to join us in Washington, where we're going to do that in this country, October2011.org. Go there. Take the pledge. If you take the pledge, it means you're a lock. You're going. Thank you so much for listening to Mad as Hell in America. I'm Adam Klugman. I'll be back next week with another great show. Thanks for listening.